Okay, and cheers.
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 And welcome at the first issue of International Open Podcast. We are here today, and I'm your host, Horst.
Hello, I'm Stefan.
Hello, I'm Dennis.
Hello, I'm Derek.
And you can find more about this podcast about the homepage of internationalopenmagazine.org. What are the topics of today? The topics of today are...
I'll bring in some explanations of what the Vienna Hackathon was. It was a refugee hackathon that happened 2 weeks ago here in Vienna. I will talk about some of the talks that happened at EuroCo 2015 that happened just a few days ago at Salzburg. For example, one talk about the Sonic Pi, which is a music library for Raspberry Pis written in Ruby, and the gaming library called Gosu, and another talk that was about how to cut any polygon by just one cut if you have one piece of paper and scissors. So this might sound a bit strange, but you will get the details later on.
I will talk about the human resource machine.
That's a game.
It's a game, yes.
Okay.
It's like Scratch, no, but it's a game.
I'll be joining in a conversation with Horst about our incredible road trip to Maker Faire Roma.
Yeah, we were traveling from Vienna to Rome for this event.
Yeah.
And I may add some little observations about teaching Makey Makey with Makey Makey and some other... Yes, and setting up Ubuntu Mate on a Raspberry Pi. Okay, let's start. Stefan. You comfortable starting?
Okay, sure.
Stefan, you was on the refugee hackathon, and I was already hearing you were covered in the Austrian radio.
That's correct. We have been on digital living. That would be the translation. Okay. German, it was digital Leben. That was quite interesting as well, because suddenly there were people arriving from Austrian radio, which we were not expecting to come up, to show up. But more about the refugee hackathon. It happened 2 weeks ago. Was located at two of the Viennese co-working spaces. One was Sector 5 and the second one is called Stockwerk. They were friendly enough or kindly enough to offer us the rooms for the programming session. And
so it was private organized in Vienna by...
Yes, absolutely.
It was not a state or city founded.
No, it was absolutely organized by enthusiasts. You can still find everything online, even on an English page, if I remember correctly. This is the URL for this is hackathon.wien. And these were the starting informations. And on Friday, seven projects were introduced, which had either already been started by enthusiasts or were just in the phase of getting started. And we founded groups to start with these projects. And in the beginning, I was very interested to join a project about opening data, which is more or less... it is public in the sense that you can get to it, but it's not in a very useful format. For example, it's hidden.
It's an open data thing.
Yes, it's an open data thing. It's data which is hidden in PDFs, and the target was to get it online in the sense that you can either access it by machines if it's exported to CSV files, or even better in a web interface, so you can easily access it without any programming knowledge. And I was very interested into that program, and I thought I could contribute there. But there were so many people at that project already, so I thought it would be maybe more interesting to go to a project than nobody. Was.
Can I just ask you, yeah, was not coming there with an already half-made pet project or an idea in your head? You
no,
just coming there
absolutely.
You said, I have skills, I'm a geek, I want
yes,
to
that's right.
For refugees.
Yeah, yeah. And also the programmers were not supposed to come with new projects because there were seven, let's call them domain experts, who came up with projects or with ideas for projects because they already were in contact or were even part of NGOs. So they actually needed what is the need. Mm-hmm. So, and I joined a different project, which I would like to tell you also about a little bit, which is called Where to Help. You can also find that already online. It's wheretohelp.at, the URL for that one. And the target of that project is to bring together NGOs and their requirements and volunteers and because volunteers are searching, they can offer their skills, can offer the times. And it happened that, for example, NGOs posted something on Facebook or on Twitter and we need 20 people, for example, just helping with simple tasks. 40 people showed up and they couldn't make any use of them because they couldn't organize them, sent 20 of them home. The other 20 helped.
Created bad immediate reactions.
But on the next day, they needed, let's say, another 21. Mm-hmm. So the first 20 couldn't help again because they had to be engaged with a job. And the other 20 were frustrated from the day before. And they said, maybe if I come back again, I will be sent for the second time. And that's no fun at all. So we would like to have this in a more organized way and also cross NGO, if you like. So not only
like volunteer job skill matchmaking.
Right, exactly.
Software.
That's it in one sentence, and that's what we started working on.
And this will be open source, I suppose.
Absolutely, not only open source, but also free software, of course. It is already.
You beat me.
We haven't decided on the actual license up to now, but it's already on GitHub, so you could look in the refugee hack area of GitHub and find the project there. And it will soon be not only available in source code form, but also in production so that the actual NGOs can use it. And that's what we're currently working on. We have been working for 2 days there. And it was sort of a contest. It was put in a contest, and I'm quite proud. I pat me on my shoulder that we made the first prize there. Because
there was a contest?
Yes, there were contests within that. Okay, so the seven projects were competing each other.
And we were the
winning team, and that was great fun because we really started at zero. We just started with the idea of one, and that's also interesting, one Luxembourg guy. Mm-hmm. He's called Roger, and the interesting part was he could talk to all the Austrian NGOs quite well because...
He
speaks fluently German, but not only that, he is not an Austrian person, so he isn't engaged in a single NGO, which could make the other NGOs jealous or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he was in sort of a neutral position and could bring several NGOs to one table and talk to each other. And that's where he picked up that idea I was talking about that matchmaking thing. And then he presented it to us, and we formed two people were doing project management, two people were doing the backend for the application. I was one of these two. Two people were doing frontend, a web frontend. Two more people were doing an Android client, so this can also then be used as an Android application. And that was maybe the most funnest thing. On the last day, one of the organizers was a bit bored because everything was working fine. They did so great preparation
that nothing to organize,
everything was running as maybe better even than expected. And so he was a bit bored and he joined in because that was a developer on his own and he started developing an iOS application. So, and we could show screenshots at the end, and this impressed the jury, and they said that could be really something useful and something easy to use for the people. And what was even more nice is that the project did not stop with the final day, but now a bit more than a week has passed and all of the people who originally were engaged in the project are still engaged. We have, I think, more than 30 further revisions of the software already. We have a next meetup next week, and we have other things planned as well. So I hope to be able to report on that project in future, that we have made success and not only a working demo or something like that, but actually the software used by actual NGOs and volunteers.
From the glow in your eyes, I get that you also like that socially.
So right,
that you
absolutely.
Get, new friendships, or at least good people.
Absolutely. It was, first of all, it was great fun to see that it's possible within 2 hours to get something working, to get a mini organization working. People were collaborating, even if they were from different countries. One guy is joining in from Croatia. We have an American guy. We have one from Luxembourg, as I said before, who is more or less project owner or the requester for the different items. Mm-hmm. We have a German guy. We have several Austrian people inside the team. So it's great fun to work in that group.
Just let me clarify. The people mostly did not know each other beforehand.
Right.
So they
right.
come just, they're willing to help
yeah.
with their skills.
Yeah.
And now I cannot resist whipping the corporate world here. You had no middle management and top management and complicated group rule master to give someone task and ask if they are done and if he can maybe motivate you to do them faster?
Yes, we had them.
You had them.
I have to disappoint you because
the corporate world creeps into the volunteer.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not. That has nothing to do with corporate world. Organization is also useful in an open source project. So two people decided to run the project management, and they were sort of shielding us from the lots of requests that were coming from the people with the ideas. Mm-hmm. So because in 2 days you can only achieve so many things.
Idea murderer.
Absolutely. Our task is to get an MVP, as it's called, running. That means a minimal viable product. Mm-hmm. So something small that can actually be tested and can be proven that it's of use. And we can still later on improve that one to get more features in or different stuff to change that.
So and this project management skill were useful.
So absolutely. Absolutely.
Forced upon a group who would...
No. A nice agile project management can still be useful or is even necessary. And the people are still in the project and help us and work with us. It's also good to have different eyes on the project, which are maybe not so technical as we, the developers, are. So yes, we are still going on.
What was the work group language? So you had people from all countries?
So the language was English, of course.
Was in English, okay. And congratulations, Stefan.
Yeah.
You sound very good. You sound very happy, very close.
Yeah, it's
inside.
Great fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like you found something very cool to have. You think this is this whole setup of going together to a refugee hackathon to solve urgent social needs is doable in every city where skilled people are?
Of course, not only in every city, but also with different topics. So this was not the first hackathon that has been organized by that team. For example, they did a food hackathon because there's so much food waste going on. And they had a hackathon organized earlier that year where I didn't join, so I don't know the details about that one. And they plan to do further ones as well. So...
What is absolutely minimum needed to do a hackathon? That all sound like, for me now, like in the Marvel comics, that some people with superpowers go together via funny pyjamas and fight the evils. What do you need? You need a room and an idea and a website? If you were in a city without hackathons, what would be the...
Good
minimum necessary to
good question. I was thinking if this could be done remotely. I'm not so sure. So I think a room and meeting is a good idea.
So you profited from the physical interaction.
Yes, I would say so. Especially when the people don't know each other in beforehand, it's easier because you have eye contact and you can talk to each other quite quickly. I would say it depends maybe even more on the social skills than the technical skills, because there is no immediate need that there comes something technically out of a hackathon. Hack in the original sense doesn't mean a program. It means a clever solution to a problem. So there could be completely different ways of solutions coming out of something like that. And so different, maybe I would like to put it the other way around, try to get as many enthusiastic people about the topic as possible, then see what skills they actually have. And then out of that one, decide what
find
you can
problem for the skills.
Find a problem that you can lose with use with the skills or so, solve with the skills.
So if I get you right, this was held in a co-working space.
Right.
They had rooms with internet connection and electricity, but you all brought your own computers.
That's right. We were actually working in two co-working spaces, so just to get more room, and we formed groups so to work on smaller in smaller groups because I think it was more than 40 people who were involved, and building a team of 40 people within such short time is probably not feasible. So it's easier to have smaller projects, smaller teams. We were even not sure if we would make it out with our 9 people, but finally that worked out. We were a bit surprised that it worked out well because we were not so sure if that group isn't too big.
Were there some kind of personnel management and headhunting going on between the projects? Like,
yes.
We need a web guy, we steal him from the...
Yes, that was in the on the first day in the evening, but I'm not sure if this went too well. It was, I would say it was a lot of good luck that this team found each other. But also when I saw the results, on the final day there were presentations before so that the jury could decide who was the winning team. And I saw, I think, 5 presentations, and from 4 of them I was really impressed. So there are lots of stuff.
5 good.
So there was
just needing more time.
Yeah, there was lots of good stuff coming. At least lots of interesting, promising stuff coming out. Just to give you maybe one more example. One project was refugees arrive at a certain area, and then maybe they don't really know each other, but they have common problems. So the idea was to build a messaging application. Most of them have smartphones with them. Lots of them don't have working SIM cards, so they depend on Wi-Fi. So it should be something that is capable of using Wi-Fi. But then to have a messaging application that is just reaching to a certain area. So let's say I'm interested to talking to people which are 10 kilometers around me because that's more or less within my walking distance. So we could collaborate with each other, share expectations, share opportunities, all that stuff. Also to help people to communicate which are in a certain region. If you put it to the situation that's currently right now in Vienna, it could be useful to restrict that area even more. Let's say just take 500 meters area around me. And exactly. People are forming around the train stations. People are grouping around the houses which...
Yeah.
Host them for the time, and so they maybe it's also possible then to find each other or find people who have same interests or same capabilities because there are always tasks to manage for them, and it's always good. Also, the other way around, it's always good to have something to do because then you can continue living and not sitting around and being depressed.
Mm-hmm. Were there any skills that were missing? Were there some people that you wished had come to bring other skills?
I think we were so busy that we were not thinking about that.
Yeah.
So that's the first time I'm thinking about that. And I'm not, in my team, I was not missing anybody. It was working out quite nicely. And sometimes we had to look up stuff, of course, but the internet is available for all of us. So. And still in future times when we need certain experts on certain topics, then we are trying to find them. Vienna is a big city with lots of people, lots of experts. You just have to find them when you need them.
About the motivation, you don't get paid for that?
Nope.
Was there at least some free food or some
yes, there was.
Some fame? So you know that you will be famous if you win the become top project, or was there some money, a trophy to get?
No. We actually won something.
Was there free beer at least?
There was free drinks. There was even free beer, but we didn't drink too much because
we had to work.
Coding drunk is maybe not the best idea. There was also a prize, which is also quite interesting because it's a breakfast at the hotel, and the hotel is very, very special one because it's run by former refugees only.
Oh, wow. You know the name of this
hotel? I don't know it by heart, but we can look it up and put it in the show notes. It's in the second district of Vienna, I know that. And there are 30 former refugees running that hotel. And I also knew that from a former story where I knew from people from the Netherlands who were living or who were guests at that hotel, and they were very happy to be there. They said it was absolutely professionally there, and that they could just recommend it to go there, not only because of the idea, but also of the quality, how the service were provided.
Very cool.
So that's a nice aspect as well. The price has a connection to refugees as well.
Did you had any mechanism or did you know about some groups who had some unfitting person, like someone who only say he can do something but was not actually having the skill or being awkward socially, so and destroying a group with his demands or something? Had you a mechanism of kicking out such persons, some personal management needs?
No.
So only good social compatible person showed up.
Yeah. Maybe that's the kind of people who show up at something like this because you know you will be working hard for 2 days
or
for
3 days.
You won't get paid.
A good filter for.
And you don't know whom you're going to work with, so your expectations are that you have to start at least a little bit more, maybe defense than you would in your daily work life or something like that. But it was.
So the male egos were kept at bay.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Still, there were lots more male developers than female ones, so the ratio was as the usual one, which is not so nice to see, but it is that way. But it was fine, yeah. And there was a few ad hoc projects starting as well there, so it was also seen very nice.
So it was like an incubator for a project.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah. For example, one guy who was. He's developing his own web application framework on top of another framework, and they need a demo application. And so usually you write the boring stuff like a blog or like a to-do application. And he decided that's not the way to go. He wants to do something useful as well. So he picked up some ideas from another project owner who couldn't get all of his, all of her ideas. It was a lady actually. All of her ideas fulfilled, though, so they started the project on their own, and I'm hearing that this project is making progress also. So there's also an Australian guy now involved to that project, which sounds fun as well. So nationalities absolutely doesn't matter in participating in such a project.
I'm very impressed, Stefan. Congratulations to going there, and I hope the next time I can somehow be helpful and join.
It was great fun, and I will report on the progress of the project.
If I get it right, if you have no refugee hack in your city, but you think there's a need for it or to solve another social problem, all you need is some space and some advertisement on Meetup or some other platforms to get read.
Maybe that
provide internet and food and electricity.
Yeah, maybe that website at hackathon.wien could be used even also as an example.
Could a template for other cities.
As a template in both ways, in the technical way, because it's on GitHub as well, so you can just clone it and go from there.
But also
content-wise, look what it's needed.
Content.
And maybe in a third way even, because the people who organized are very approachable, so you could talk to them and ask them, sharing with their experiences.
So we will put links into not yet existing show notes of this not yet really existing podcast because it's our first issue, but you will find them all on the website internationalopenmagazine.org. Look for a podcast issue 1 and then we will link from there.
Sure.
One last question to this topic. Were there actual refugees participating?
Yes, there were.
Former refugees who settled in Vienna?
There were actual refugees there. Mm-hmm. I think I met 2 of them. They were not so much participating in the programming, but they were putting up the issues they have, and so their needs were included in projects that happened. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks, Stefan.
You're welcome.
Just to short change of topic, I forgot to mention this podcast is recorded at the, I think, 20th October 2015. We are sitting here in Vienna in the restaurant Zypresse, Westbahnstraße 35A in Vienna's 7th District. It's a Kurdish restaurant that we also can recommend because we like the owner. And yeah, we cannot say you where and when the next podcast will be because this is the first issue, but look at internationalopenmagazine.org and there you will find hints. Okay, another topic, Dennis. Dennis, you had a very interesting topic written on the list. You wrote a human resource machine.
Yes.
What's that?
That's a game. It's a game like the programming language Scratch.
Wow.
It's really a game. So it has a story. I don't know which story, but I know it has a story. You are a human employee at an enterprise Unternehmen.
Enterprise, yeah.
Enterprise.
It's playing on
earth. Yeah. And Tomorrow Corporation named.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so like the developer they named Tomorrow Corporation 2. You can know them. They programmed World of Goo and.
Yeah. And they are, as I know from Bierdacher podcast, they're one of your favorite game producers.
Yes. Okay.
It's a closed source game, it's no open source game?
No, it's closed source.
Okay.
The game is really funny, it has humor, it has a nice graphical style, like World of Goo and the other game.
That you will look up in the show notes.
Yeah.
I should remember too. I can't remember.
Yeah. It's step up.
And you actually played the game or you
no,
just watched
not yet.
Demos?
Okay. I looked for the game. I know I knew that the game will released last week. And so I searched for the game, but I can't pay for it, so I have to get some bitcoins for it. But now I have bitcoins.
Because you will buy it over Steam or
Over Humble Bundle.
Over Humble Bundle.
Yeah,
if
you go to the homepage of Tomorrow Corporation, you can buy it on his homepage, and it's a little plug-in from Humble Bundle. You pay it.
Bitcoin payment provider.
Yeah,
Humble Bundle also with Bitcoin.
One of few, and the game has the graphical style like World of Goo, and you have to program the one human. You are the employee who has to do the to-dos of the vorgesetzten employer, supervisor.
Yeah.
Yes, supervisors.
So this is actually, if you ever wondered why in corporations all the employees look like remote-controlled robots, this is because someone like playing this game does that. You make to-do lists and tasks for them.
Yeah.
And you play such a guy.
Yeah, and you have to program some steps. There are simple steps. There's an input band, and band is that right?
Like in a factory?
Band.
Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
An input band and an output band, and some store, like CPU registers. And on the input band, you have symbols like numbers and some letters, and you can program, took something from the input and take them on the output, or copy to the registers in the middle.
It's like very basic Turing machine programming.
Yeah, it's really easy.
So you like that?
Yeah, and you have at the first step you have only input and output. Later you have add and sub and
so you can make operations with the numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You have
compute actually
in the registers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
You have something in your hand and add something from the registers to your symbol in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And later you can put it on the output. You have, of course, jump. Jump if not zero. Jump if not if. Sorry. Jump if sorry as zero and jump if negative.
So we have conditions, conditional programming.
Yeah.
You can do some procedure.
Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you can program. Like in Turing machine, you have at one, it named bump
mm-hmm.
plus and plus minus. It's incremental and decremental,
mm-hmm.
and so you can program a full Turing machine.
Mm-hmm. And you think the game is still fun? It's not some like learning game for computer science students.
It's a little bit both.
Mm-hmm.
For children, it's funny to the graphical style and the something to do, and you can learn to program
mm-hmm.
because they have blocks like in Scratch,
mm-hmm.
and you drag and drop it on a list.
Mm-hmm.
So you can jump at. In this list, and there are it's possible to drag and drop comments. That's really important because if you program a complex program, you have to make comments
mm-hmm.
later.
So
you can't
so
understand.
Actual good important programming habits.
Yeah, like an assembler,
okay.
but not like a functional or objective.
Do you think this game is more fun than going to an assembler tutorial to learn assembler?
Yeah, it's nicer than assembler, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny for children and easy to learn because it's you haven't the full. Functionality of this language
mm-hmm.
at the first, you have only
restricted code size, so you go step by step.
Mm-hmm. And what you have to do is at the first really easy. Later it would be more complicated,
mm-hmm.
More complex, and there are some. Motivations because they have optimization steps.
Mm-hmm. So you save time if you have a more clever command.
Yeah.
So you're motivated to get it.
Yes. They have a minimum of steps
mm-hmm.
in your list, and they have steps minimum to do. Each step.
Mm-hmm.
So they count the list and they count the steps
mm-hmm.
the human has done.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's the smallest possible
mm-hmm.
way,
so if
you
program
have,
effective, you get some reward.
You yes.
Cool.
On I will buy it today,
mm-hmm.
and I will report in
okay.
another podcast.
I must say
that.
There are a lot of learning game or free learning sites outside who teach the basic of procedural
mm-hmm.
programming with some kind of game like
robot
to a maze and loops and conditionals. But
yeah.
This sounds more hardcore to assembler. And
yeah.
I say how it works out.
At the homepage, you can find some tutorials to other assembler
mm-hmm.
languages
mm-hmm.
because they have described his
mm-hmm.
steps and what. They have want to, so
yeah.
you can read like a machine works as
cool.
CPU.
Yeah. So hopefully this will inspire some kids to interact with assembler.
I hope.
Language. Can you again say the website where you get the game?
Tomorrow Corporation.
Tomorrow Corporation. .com.
I think it's
.com. Okay. We'll be in the show notes. Well, Stefan, you were scribbling. You have some remarks?
Meanwhile, even two more things came to my mind. I'm not so sure if it's a good idea if I get into this. One is, I don't remember the name of that game, so I have to look it up and then we put it in the show notes. It's a game for learning JavaScript. It's an online game, so you don't have to
just
install.
Runs with your web browser.
Runs with the web browser. Don't have, and the task is quite a funny one. It's one I've been thinking before a lot and still didn't come to proper solutions. The task is that you have to program an elevator.
Like in the sim, in what, there was one sim game in the 90s.
But here you get a DSL, so a domain specific language, what you can do with that elevator, and depending on conditions, you can program it and you get several tasks. For example, in the beginning there are, I think, only two floors, and then it's quite easy. Just go up and then go down and make a loop, and then every request will be fulfilled automatically.
I think I actually played it.
But then it gets harder and harder, and I think on level 3, it was not just doing it by writing it down. So
must make loops and conditions.
And people are arriving, and your task is a certain amount of...
You see that actually on the browser. You see the people going and waiting for the elevator.
And then you can change the program and try another one, try another iteration if you can manage to fulfill the task. For example, getting 50 people to their target floor.
So the
people have a certain task.
I think we had that in some issue of Biertocher podcast in German language already.
That could be.
I played it once, and it was nice. It was for me a bit not so for little kids appealing, but more for hardcore programmers. So they want to go into JavaScript.
When you described the game, I just realized at the end you were describing assembler actually. Mm-hmm. So I one more talk came into my mind that I saw at Uruku last week. There is quite an intense community forming around Commodore 64 again.
Yeah.
That's quite funny.
Burn again, we that was born in the 70s.
Yes. And the funny thing, if you look at the numbers of how many games are actually published during the history, it's been never more than 2014. So it's still increasing, even that you can't buy that machine anymore.
Actually, people are now publishing games
absolutely
for the Commodore 64 that is even never produced.
Yeah.
You can only buy old machines or emulators.
You can, sometimes you can get a chance to buy new ones. The biggest problem is that the processors are not produced anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can get some old chips, like the processors, the main processors, or the CPUs or the GPUs, there was an extra graphics chip on that and an extra audio chip on that, then you can buy new main boards, and you can buy new cases for them. That can be done, and there is quite a big community forming around that with new websites and stuff. And also an interesting approach is how to circumvent the issue that you cannot get a new machine. It's quite easy. With an emulator. Machines are currently so fast that on a proper smartphone you can just download an emulator and run games on that one.
With your smartphone, you have the Commodore 64 experience because the emulator is still fast enough.
It's
so I was not aware of that. It's actually pretty cool.
And you can, there are nice, in former days it was a mess to do an assembler program. There were no proper editors, all that stuff. But now you program that on your PC or Mac or whatever with a full IDE, which gives you code completion and all that stuff. And you have the internet open on a second window and look up the main pages there. And then you can do more effective.
Like you never could do back in the 80s.
Yes. Yes. And you compile on your machine, which is way faster than the actual
hard. And you think these are all old guys in their 40s and 50s that revive their children dreams, also their dreams of their childhood, to have these perfect Commodore 64 games they had not as a child themselves, or are there other motivation to do such a thing?
We also asked the presenter of the talk at Uruku, and he thinks it's more or less two groups. Mm-hmm. One is more or less what you described, the old guys, which are sometimes a bit hard to approach, because it's not, they seem to have the feeling that it's not fair that you can go now the easy route. You should go through all the troubles again as they had to do when they were learning all that stuff. But there is also quite a big group of younger mm-hmm. people forming and mm-hmm. Who really build up communities, smaller communities online and exchange their knowledge, put up tutorials, blog posts, as it's done now with any community.
But where get the cool factor of Commodore 64? I mean, it was something their parents used. Compared with all these gizmos that are out there, that must be extremely uncool and like having an old-timer.
Yes and no. You have in mind that there are lots of restrictions there, and mm-hmm. lots of these restrictions can be circumvented by being mm-hmm. clever.
Yeah.
So it's you have to prove yourself that you can get around these restrictions. If you remember the demos from earlier times,
there is also
quite a big demo scene right now.
It's still alive.
And forming again and getting bigger, and also the number of demos are published are growing, and also the material that is public on the internet, it's getting more and more. So, for example, I've seen demos now with 3D graphics, with mm-hmm. shaders, and even, I don't know how you would call that, you see a 3D stick figure animated, so they do breakdance mm-hmm. dancing and that stuff. That was not...
And this all with 64 KB RAM,
yes.
Which is even not fully
And 1 GHz processor, and this... One megahertz processor.
Well, and I think part of it too is that you mentioned the word restrictions, and so with the Commodore 64, there are very specific limitations, and I think that's a huge appeal, because when you're developing for all different platforms mm-hmm. and all different browsers and mm-hmm. and deciding between going for a console or mm-hmm. or going for a PC, I think there's a lot that we enjoy. So it's not just the older people that had Commodore 64s, but if we develop something new and cool and retro, it's like an old car now, or an old radio, or an old piece of furniture. I think, and the 64 was the most, it's the best-selling computer of all time. It was in the market for so long that it has this sort of mythic thing, and I get excited selfishly because I'm writing a novel that takes place in the near future, but about a young girl whose mother gives her Commodore 64 because she doesn't know how old a computer it is. She just finds it in a thrift shop. But that girl is able to do so much more with her Commodore than her peers can do with their closed computers. So I think there's a real appeal to something that that's easy to hack and code.
What was also so appealing about these machines is when you switched them on, you could immediately start writing code, which cannot be done with the current machines.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is a basic interpreter.
You're Microsoft basic interpreter right from the start.
It's not Microsoft.
It was Microsoft.
It was?
It was Microsoft.
Okay, so you had a basic...
We all learned it by Microsoft.
Yeah.
That's why we all used Windows later.
Yeah, okay. And also what is appealing, that the assembler is quite easy to learn compared to current processors, because it has less way features,
It was simpler.
It was a lot simpler. It's only an 8-bit machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, 8-bit machine with 16-bit registers, if I
it's
remember.
It's a CISC or a RISC processor?
No, it was not RISC, it was Z80 processor.
I don't remember
maybe
that.
Just link to the Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's also quite funny, if you learn that assembler machine, that you're not only capable of programming Commodore 64, because that was also the processor was also used in different machines.
Yeah.
For example, in the first Nintendo game engines. So if you can program that one, then you can also program for the other devices, which are also now available as emulators, which is quite nice.
And to go back in memory lane, back to the 80s, if you wanted a decent game on the Commodore 64, you had to program it in assembler because with all the high-level language that existed, you could download Pascal for a Commodore 64. You did not get the speed and so it was necessary to go into assembler, learn assembler, and you learned quite a bit programming on the hardcore level.
And interestingly enough, we then had also the connection to the Ruby, which was the conference was actually about. So Ruby is currently in heavy discussions how to deal with the problem of concurrency, and then more as a joke, but not so much as a joke. The concurrency problem was more or less solved with Commodore 64 because they had the interrupts then. So that could even be a pattern that could be mapped to modern programming languages again. Wow. Yeah. You're running out of batteries, are you fine?
Yeah, let's stop now.
Okay.
You're still listening to International Open Podcast issue 1. We had a little battery change break and Dennis managed to remove the card, SD card of the microphone. So if my voice is still shocking and vibrating from horror, that's because of Dennis' jokes.
But everybody knows that I have knew that I have removed the SD card.
And because I have a trusty personality and cannot read faces, I did not even suspect it. Well, and now I get scolded because I don't know what 21 October 2015 is for. What is this date for?
Yeah, you
no
know,
idea.
Back to the Future?
Ah, this is the day that was referenced in Back to the Future 1.
Yeah, it will be tomorrow for us, not for you. We have the 2010-15, and tomorrow the time machine will arrive.
And a young, how is the actor called? J. Fox?
Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox.
Will
yeah.
go out and ask for this wired professor, weird professor.
But, but he won't find hoverboards. So that's a big impact on current
history.
Actually,
there are hoverboards. Yeah. I've seen YouTube
there
videos,
are some.
Whatever. Yeah,
and 20th Century Fox produced advertise for hoverboards. So they have some advertising for it. Pepsi has an own bottle for this day because in Back to Future 2, there are used some Pepsi bottles, and these Pepsi had produced now, and some other things will.
There should
happen.
Be those Levi's jeans. I remember there were jeans that would reshape to the body
and the shoes,
Nikes.
And now I have to bring in Austrian Ministry of Transportation. There is an actual connection to the date because today they brought out traffic regulation for hoverboards.
Wow.
Not kidding you. You can find it up on the website.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you have time at this day, there are some triple features in some cinemas.
Also, so you can watch all three Back to the Future movies in binge-watching mode.
Worldwide. I heard in Germany and Austria it will be provided, I think, in America too. And I think tomorrow all streets are very empty and everybody is
in the cinema.
Okay. And we'll hear Johnny Be Good on every radio station.
Okay. Well, we have still a big topic.
Yeah.
Maker Faire Rome. I just want to quickly add that I had my first experience with Makey, that famous author of Scratch for Dummies computer book gifted to me. The author's name is Derek Breen, and we are here very open for inside advertisement if you like the people. And yeah, yesterday with a student of mine, I run the computer courses in Vienna. Afternoon computer course school, and I used Makey with a 9 year old. I think he was 9 year old, and this was very fun. He was easy to entertain. So, if he's with some older guys and they do something in Scratch, he cannot stop laughing. I really did not get what you find funny. But you find nearly everything
bananas.
Funny, but then it was like he had a never ending joy button if we connected Makey to. I don't even know where I connected it. So it's a little board, and you connect it to the USB of your computer, and it can emulate a click of a mouse and some keys like space keys and arrow keys. Mm-hmm. And you have wires with connection
alligator
clips.
Yeah.
And you have one grounding and other clips to match the key. And the idea is you can then use your body or parts of body or fluids or something as keys or mouse clicks for to control games or whatever.
So it's not dangerous for kids playing with it because it's low voltage and low currencies and so on.
Exactly, yes.
And you don't need to soldier anything.
You don't need to soldier. Just only need to operate these alligator clips.
Sounds nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, one side of the board is set up like a very simple Nintendo game controller with up, down, left, right, and a few buttons. The other side is more like a traditional keyboard. So you clip in different areas to control Scratch or control a video game. That one of my favorites is using slices of pepperoni pizza to control a PowerPoint presentation. So left and right slices of pizza. So it's a very playful thing. They say it's an invention kit for everyone, and it turns everyday objects into ways to control your computer. So using water or being able to create your own game controller so that you have to jump up and down like on a trampoline to jump in Mario Land or some kind of platform game. Like it's really, it invites creativity, I think, in a really cool way, and doing it in the real world instead of just on the computer.
It also invites tinkering, at least my box, because there was no instruction whatsoever inside.
Yeah.
So I think this is by design, or I don't know if someone removed the instruction, so you really have to figure it out yourself, but it's not hard.
I have experience with the Makey Makey 2. Last podcast, this is the first, but I talk about the last.
Podcast, yes.
So
that must be Biertocher Podcast 226.
I talked about a game I programmed with MIDI, and we used Makey Makeys as inputs too.
Mm-hmm.
We had a letter. A book you have to aufschlagen and
turn the pages.
Yeah, turn the pages to make a contact.
Ah, okay. So you used a book as a switch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some triangle.
Uh-huh.
Music instrument.
Yeah, and something else I don't remember. And
mm-hmm.
this are for playing something like Pong,
mm-hmm.
but it was a music game,
mm-hmm.
and you have two pedals.
Mm-hmm.
The player one has one pedal, the other has
mm-hmm.
the other, and you can control with these panels. And yeah, we used Makey Makeys for that.
Mm. And it works good.
Yeah. Mm. We tried bananas.
Yeah.
We thought about to use padding.
Mm-hmm.
Because it were really funny if you have to put the thing
in the chips in the padding.
Yeah.
Yeah. It works really easy.
Well, I can also report that the 9-year-old who was my student had endless fun. If I touch his nose, we set it up with Scratch that if the space key is pressed, a sound emits, yes? So when I touched his nose and the computer made a noise. It was unstoppable.
It's one of the first things I always do with kids. The creators of Makey Makey, it was Jay Silver and Eric Rosenbaum.
It's also Eric Rosenbaum.
Yeah, so we mentioned Eric Rosenbaum in another podcast because he created a way to do 3D in Scratch. So Jay and Eric were both part of the lifelong kindergarten group at MIT. They both got their PhDs last year, but they were still students, and they raised the money to manufacture Makey Makeys by doing a Kickstarter campaign. So it was crowdsourced, which is great. And they even donated several Makey Makeys for me to bring to Africa for Africa Code Week.
Also,
so,
I get indirectly my Makey Makey direct from Eric Rosenbaum.
Yeah, indirectly, indirectly.
But I'm famous.
Yeah, so I was able to leave four of them in Africa at two different schools. And so I have a bunch of students working on projects that they're going to report back as a way to have continuity after Africa Code Week.
Cool.
So it's pretty cool. Yeah, there's a fantastic, we'll link to a TED talk by Jay Silver about the why he wanted to create Makey Makey. He was partially inspired by a trip to a third world country, I think in South America, where he was really impressed at the way that kids could make all sorts of things out of just grass and leaves and things that they found in the jungle. And he wondered if there was a way to bring that to first world kids, and Makey Makey was a response to that. So it's really cool.
Actually bring nature back to white.
Yeah.
White kids who see too much for the computer.
Yeah.
Wooden keys.
Yeah, wooden keys.
I remember 3 years ago on the Linux Weeks in Vienna, there was a presentation from the Firefox guy.
Yeah.
He demonstrated Unreal Tournament in the browser. That's the topic, but he has used a Makey Makey for that. And bananas,
yeah.
Of course.
You can play Unreal Tournament with bananas.
Yeah. But it's not impossible to take the banana and shoot with bananas to something.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Oh, cool.
But that's so much of what I like about it, is that it uses real world objects that people can find. Like at the Scratch conference last summer, people were doing musical instruments out of rubbish from a Starbucks cafe, cups and aluminum and all that stuff. And so I think it really gets at a new level of creativity. I think it's cool. Yeah.
How does such a device appear for Scratch? Is it a game controller for Scratch?
Yeah.
Then?
Yeah, game controller. Also, they're very popular with DJs in New York who are making their own custom controllers for MIDI.
Yeah.
And if you see the TED Talk, one of the most heartwarming moments is a father who has a son, I think, with cerebral palsy or some other disease, so his son can't move his body very well. And his father can create a custom keyboard based on the movement that his son has. So it's really enabling people to do engineering that might not otherwise be able to control a computer. And it doesn't require any drivers. It's just plug and play with PC, Mac, and Linux.
It's
just
a,
like any keyboard.
It's a normal keyboard via USB and
a mouse.
Yeah.
But it's limited to, I think, 16 keys. It's not possible to emulate the whole keyboard with over 100 keys. And the funny thing is, on this Makey Makey, there's Arduino CPU. So you can use it as
Arduino. Arduino inbuilt in the Makey Makey?
Yeah. On the board is an Arduino.
I think that's right. I think they built it from the same board, I think. Yeah.
It's not an Arduino, but it's totally compatible
to
Arduino.
Yeah.
It's the same chip.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you can program your own programs.
I see.
And you can do things like a theremin, because it lets you control the mouse position, and it even has acceleration.
Yeah.
So if it's mouse up, it gradually accelerates just like a mouse would or a trackpad. It's really very thoughtful. They also, there's another product, they gave me one to bring to Africa called Draudio, which they did together, and it lets you have this little circuit with a speaker on a paintbrush or a pencil, and then water or paint or pencil lead becomes the medium for doing like a theremin, that you can have basic sound, so you can sort of paint with sound, which is something that Eric Rosenbaum's been exploring with touch-based interfaces with iPad apps. So I don't know if you saw his demo, but he does. So Singing Fingers is the app that we did in another podcast, and he also has a thing called Melody Morph that really explores the way that you can create non-linear music, so a way for children to create music with their voices and their fingers, and this concept of what's it called when you cross the different senses together, like touch and feel and touch and more like there's a word where your senses get sort of crossed, where you taste colors synesthesia or synesthetics. This idea of crossing different senses. Yeah.
Another short one?
On another short one. Yes.
Topic?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because you inspired me with bringing paint and sound together. I was listening also at Euroku to a talk by Joseph Wilk. I learned about this guy when I met him in Berlin 3 years ago, where he was talking about the use of language at programming, how we sometimes misuse it. So, and he was comparing to language usage in literature, which was also quite interesting. So that talk was very inspiring. And now 3 years later, I met him again in Salzburg. And I was expecting something about literature again, but now he switched completely his area where he's working. He's more or less, I would say, an artist and not so much a coder anymore. He's doing actual performances with sonic pies, which are also in used, are used in school for teaching about programming, teaching about music and all that stuff together. And he uses it for actual performances. Which contain, of course, of sound. So he also gave a live performance at that audience in Salzburg. It was in a quite big hall there with 600 attendees, and the lights were dimmed down, and this was incredible to hear really that small sonic pie filling up the whole conference hall. And not only did he provide us with incredible sound, but also with animations. There are libraries which can quite easily be included into Sonic Pi programs. And there is meanwhile, when I was looking into Sonic Pi a few years ago, and looked, for me, it looked not very approachable and not very appealing. And that has so much progressed. So the code was quite easily readable. I didn't know it before. I just was looking on the screen where it was projected. And as the background of the screen, he used animations and gave this presentation that was really awesome. You could hear if somebody would have dropped his or her pen in the... And it was absolutely quiet in that room, besides the sounds he was producing with it. And in the beginning, it seemed to be quite easy because he started from scratch with the program, so it just was some simple noises. But in the end, it was something like you have maybe heard or seen from VJs, from video DJs. Yeah, it was a full performance, full professional, and all done in real time with programming. He just created...
Was it created on the fly?
On the fly. Nothing prescripted. He just was, you could see in his face when he was pleased with something. And for every now and then, that Sonic Pi is also quite clever, so it catches errors. So every now and then you do mistype when you do, especially when you are...
So it is an error correction in
it doesn't crash, but it gives you an error message and tries to help you a little bit how you can figure out. And afterwards, I talked a little bit to him, and he told me, because I was asking him as well if he did preparations, and he said, of course, he knows his stuff more or less, but still it's always a bit of experimenting with the numbers and the filters and the instruments and all that. And at one certain point in time, he just mistyped and something came out that he wasn't expecting. Mm-hmm. So he was a little bit shocked because he was expecting something completely different. But
it was live.
And while he was shocked about it, he started to like it. So he thought, why not let it in and build it in, and then that changed his further performance. So that was really nice to see that.
And you could theoretically repeat all that with just Sonic Pi and some plugins.
It was actually Sonic Pi, so absolutely.
Good motivation to look into Sonic Pi.
And he does this. We asked him how much training does he have, and he told us he does this now for more than 2 years and almost every day, so just trying to get better. And his logs, you can log Sonic Pi input. And his logs are captured, and he publishes them on the internet. So you can download them and learn from him how he's approaching the stuff. So that was really the most artistic stuff I've ever seen at a programming conference. But that was art; that was not programming.
This guy makes money out of his. I'm not sure.
But it's also cool that it's programming as performance. That the programming is part of the performance. Yeah. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
like improvisation.
And it's almost shocking when you see him the first time. He has to be in a wheelchair, so he comes quite small onto that stage, and suddenly he rocks it by programming.
Okay. We have to make a okay, some of us have finished eating, while others will take a longer time eating. So we continue the International Open Podcast. And we have one topic left, and this is that Derek and me were together on our first road trip to Maker Faire Rome in Italy.
Roma!
Derek, you like it?
Oh, it was wonderful. I don't think either of us expected it to be so huge. The scale of it was really overwhelming, but so worth traveling and meeting people from not just Rome or even Italy, but all over the world that were there, don't you think?
Yeah, it was one of the biggest maker fairs in Europe, so I heard. There is another big maker fair in Germany, Hanover. I cannot give exact dates because I never was there, but what we heard from the participants in Rome alone and from the people who had tables there, they said it was one of the biggest in Europe.
And next year it should come to Austria as well, Alfred.
Yeah, I heard we will have a little maker fair Vienna. I suppose this is small at the beginning and will maybe grow larger.
So how was your experience at the maker fair?
Yeah, well, to give a bit of a description, I have not yet the exact dates. Maybe you can read them in the show notes at internationalopenmagazine.org. The Wool Maker Faire happened in a university district. It's not a university building, it was a Wool district with several houses, gardens, and even their own church. This district was called Sapienza.
Sapienza
is one of the oldest university districts of Rome. And basically from Friday till Sunday, it was occupied by makers. And they closed most of the buildings, but instead of buildings, they made in the free space of this university district, there were large parks inside, they put on big tents. And inside the tents, there were small tables for each exhibitor. And so one tent had typically, I think, between 50 and 100 tables. Each table were manned by two or three persons presenting their project with signs and putting their hardware projects mostly on the table. And the crowd could go through these tents. The tents were usually very long rectangles. So you go through and in both directions. And there were about, I think, 2,000 tents at least.
Yeah, and the tents were organized on certain themes. So projects were grouped together like on energy or transportation
textile,
or, yeah, 3D fabrication, yeah. Like,
drones.
Yeah.
When I think about a maker fair, I always think about 3D printers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So maybe can you give some other examples what you have seen there?
Of the not 3D printers.
Of the not 3D printers.
I must add that we have seen a lot of 3D printers and a lot of 3D printed stuff. Yeah. Yes, one of the other examples, well, there were textiles, there were steampunk players, there was a drone flying a rear, so a giant cube with nets so that the drones could not escape. And people made art flying courses, so they tried to fly their drones through hoops and so. Then what was there? There were a lot of music, so music was the
Yeah, musical instruments. We saw an incredible device that played an acoustic guitar. So they built this machine that would play any music. It made any guitar into like a music box. They would feed music into it, and then it would pluck with some devices and also finger with different controllers, like servo systems.
And do you have to expect that people try to sell stuff to you, or is it
some?
Yeah,
some sold. But as we learned, if you did not sell something, if you had just an information table about your project, you get the table for free.
Ah, cool.
So there were things like Internet of Things Zurich, who was a guy who just presented his stuff, and he did by intentional did not want to sell them. He said, The plans are online. You can download it yourself and build it yourself. So it was such and such. So there were commercial projects. There were most projects who were students' projects or young entrepreneur projects who hoped to become an enterprise and show their products. Mm-hmm. And there were some intentional open source, open hardware projects who had not even commercial interest, and a lot of mixed, of course.
And some of the big companies were there, like IBM and Microsoft, and they had their booths. They tried to make them creative, so it wasn't just like promoting the Office suite or something. Microsoft developed this huge keyboard that a bunch of people could play on the floor, like from the movie Big, where they would step on the different keys. And it was set up to play Beethoven's Ninth, like the Ode to Joy, without needing to know the music or anything. But it was mostly people showing off their own projects. That's what I liked about it. There was a lot of creativity.
A lot of diversity and
collaboration, and also inspiring each other. And then there were a few huge tents dedicated just for children to tinker with things. I participated in some Scratch workshops. There were robotics and even more like artsy arts and crafts type things. So it was tons of families going through, like,
so yeah. Children are also allowed to come in and play with the stuff.
Actually, you had to pay entrance. I did not exactly know if children under a certain age were free, but there were a lot of family with a lot of children there. So it was really a popular event.
If you were allowed to take three items with you from that maker fair.
Well, that's easy. I would have taken the three robots of the heavy metal band. There was a really heavy metal band consisting of heavy metal robot made out of metal chunk, and they were performing. So they made a huge stage where these robots were with their heavy metal guitar and drums, and then a performist who had a very punk, fucked up remote control and controlled this robot, and there was some mixture of hard rock music and steam robot cyber thing performance and rock band. I think I wanted them just for me, to scare the shit out of people, because they were very impressive and very big, so larger than humans and very intimidated looking.
I would have taken, there was a bamboo bicycle, so the whole frame was made out of bamboo, and then there was a skateboard made out of grass or hay or something that was really interesting. And then I really wanted this Airstream trailer that had been converted into a children's coding laboratory, like a portable laboratory. That I took more pictures of that one Airstream trailer than anything else at the Maker Faire. I think it was so cool that the whole side opened up and invited kids in to try out different things. It was really cool.
Cool. You find all our pictures on Flickr, and we will also link it on the show notes. The hashtag of the whole event was
MakerFaireRoma.org. On Twitter.
You can find it there.
And did it trigger some new projects maybe for you?
New project for us? Well, I learned that you can have a free table there, so I want to be there next time, especially with my friends from Internet of Things Austria and Internet of Things Vienna. And, well, there were a lot huge of diversity of projects. There were fish tank controls with Arduino. There were Arduino successor projects with integrated website and sharing repository. It was actually so much projects that I was not visiting all the tents, because some were so stuffed with romance people that this was too full for me. There were tents dedicated to rockets, tents dedicated to drones, tents dedicated to music, tents dedicated to student projects, tents dedicated to 3D printing, to 3D stamping, one only for textiles. For fashion. So if you had any interest at all in making something yourself, you would have found a tent with groups specialized in this area. I was naturally more interested in the open source project, so I will speak about some that I remember mostly. One was a very nice student, and he made his own remote one-way drone, so like a toy, a big toy airplane. and it could deliver a non-military payload up to 2 kilograms, 100 kilometer for 100 euro, something like that were the specs. And I said, well, you created the first do-it-yourself cruise missile for terrorists. And he said, no, it's non-military.
You can use any technology for good or for bad.
Of course, yes. Mm. Then another thing, I really was deeply impressed, they cooperated with British Space Society something. They made an open source space simulator for the Soyuz aircraft, for the Russian aircraft. Mm. And the simulator could train you with two joysticks to learn the docking maneuver if you want to dock a Soyuz spaceship to the International Space Station. So that was really cool, I think. And well, there were a lot other cool stuff. Hungarian made a switch table, so a table that you can use while you stand and while you sit. Mm-hmm. It had some counterweights, so with a pull you could...
A standing desk out of it.
Yeah. And that's just a beautiful design. So not, yeah. And a lot of little projects, big projects, all kind of projects.
I was really impressed by the way that a bunch of different coder dojos came together. So there was a coder dojo area, and they had different workshops for children that could just show up and try out robotics and a little bit of programming and a little bit of design. So that's something that if I went back, I'd love to do more preparation for having more spaces where kids could explore things together. And Horst made a great friend who was doing Minecraft modding stuff using running on Raspberry Pis, and there was a ton of people have developed all different Raspberry Pi accessories, different like touch screens for Raspberry Pi and displays and input devices and boxes. And so it really seems like people are embracing the open architecture of things like Raspberry Pi and Arduino.
Also, you must keep in mind that Arduino is in part an Italian project. It was built by Italian students, I think, or makers. And so they showed there of their literature. There was a whole shop for Arduino books. And they showed off this successor projects of Arduino. Mm-hmm. And there were some really cool stuff, especially if you're interested in education with tech. Yeah, I will try to write a blog post about our things. At the moment, while we record this podcast, only the pictures are online. I may add something that I noticed as an Austrian visiting Italy. And I think it was incredibly peaceful if you keep in mind how many people were there in such a concentrated area. But there were some strange things, like police come up with riot cars, with water cannons, at the same time as a lot of school buses were loading off their school children with teachers. And then later we learned that some students were protesting that the university area was closed off for the maker fair, and they still had to go to the building and they were protesting. So there was some mix of... And what I personally disliked the most was the lack of toilets. They had some... How you call them?
Porta potties,
but not every porta potty was located near public fountain. So sometimes people come out of the porta potties and could not wash their hands at all. And then of all the buildings, only three were open, and of them only two had an inbuilt toilet like we know them. So not one toilet that was in a public restaurant. There was a very long queue of people, and the other was lucky wise very hidden. So I managed to find them, but I spent a half day just systematically searching for toilets because I had a long train travel. I wanted a good toilet. It's a bit
strange. And also, it didn't seem like there were many food options. There were so many people and so few places to get food.
They had food stalls, but not
yeah, there
very
were
much.
There were a few, a few for tens of thousands of people, but it seems like that could have been tied into the maker sense a little bit more. That maybe there'd be some food like some interesting ways to prepare food or organic and all
stuff. On the other hand, I feel as if. Yeah, I think about this topic while I was there, and I think most of the Roman families, they come there with their little childs and Romans and Yes, and parents are guarding the child, and so. And I think they were not spoiled like me that I go to a big event and expect a perfect toilets and perfect food opportunities. They may had organized something in advance, like if I go spend one day on this university area, I may pack some lunch or I may go with my noisy kids to the toilet first. I mean, they had maybe more experience for even. So there was no complaining. I've seen nobody complaining, which is incredible by this amount of people. I have not the exact numbers, but I guess there were at least more than 50,000 people on this event, maybe double or three times its size. Because it was three days, and it even the Friday before noon was reserved for schools. Mm-hmm. So it was public only after Friday afternoon. Then it was packed with people, and peaceful people, I must really say. Peaceful, stylish Roman people.
Yeah.
With children, with shoving their buggies with children through packed tents and all peaceful.
So next year you're going to...
I really
visit
want to
again.
Have a table there. Yeah. At least for Internet of Things Austria. And maybe for my own company, I don't know. But it's if you have some project to show off, do it in Italy. It's
and
well worth a trip.
And now you have to translate all your stuff to Italian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. It, if you go to Italy, it's very good to have some translator, have at least some folder in Italian language that you can hand out to the people. There were some people at tables who did not speak Italian, and they also communicated it. It was not that big a deal. Also, the organizers tried to announce everything in English, and most of the project had Italian and English dual language, at least dual language posters. Mm-hmm. So you could, even if you could not speak Italian, you could see what is about. But of course, in Italy, most of people speak Italian mostly and not very good English, if at all. That's clear. I can say on a personal light side, it's very easy to make Italian makers very happy. You just go around and speak with them English, which is funny enough. So, and then you say, yes, you just say, I'm from out of Italy, yes, wherever, yes, and you say, I want to write about that, and even if it's just a Facebook entry, and they get so happy, you don't believe it, yes, so like, the first that make them happy is that you come from so far, just sit their table, yes, and then that you even want to write about them, and they want to make selfies with you and so on. I really had a big joy of just making going around and say, yeah, I will post about it in my international blog, and that made them really enormous happy. So it was well worth the trip for this feeling. Derek, your thoughts? We ran again low on the batteries.
So yeah,
bring it on.
It was part of what was exciting is just to see that it. You don't have to be an American company or in America to do really innovative things with electronics and computers. It was so great to be outside of the US and to be surrounded by these really innovative people from all over Europe. And it just reminded me that Americans don't own innovation. There's innovation all over the place. And I think also being in Italy, there was a sense of this historical connection to engineering innovations through the centuries. So every time I saw something with fabric or something with an engine or something with engineering, it made me think of the great Italian pioneers, like Da Vinci being the sort of poster child for innovation. And even some of the ways that drones were designed, they look like beautiful Da Vinci drawings. I think style was a much bigger part than what we might see at other maker fairs because of the Italian emphasis and historical ties to design. So that was really cool.
I must also add that I've seen unstylish Roman people. They seem to be very stylish, all of them. So incredible. So even the nerds there were more stylish than normal people here, just a bit less stylish than the people visiting the tables.
Yeah.
Really seem to be taking a lot of effort in fashion and good looking. Yeah, we also had much fun in Rome. We were visiting a graveyard, which was huge. It was near the university area, and we just a bit too early and wanted to have peaceful lunch. And it was we had the whole graveyard for us nearly.
Yeah, I mean it was an entire town. It had built like skyscrapers and. It was
so really
incredible.
Big monuments, like little towers.
Not like the central.
No, you could fit the whole Vienna Central Cemetery in a little patch of this. And this had really mountains inside and hills and gorgeous. It
was really going up stairway after stairway into areas. Like.
And the best thing for us, so whole Rome is populated by cats. Remarkably well fed, maybe they hide the hungry cats. And in the graveyards, we discovered, to our joy, we discovered parrots, so flying from tree to tree, green parrots. And this alone was very magical for us to go in a place and see wild parrots. And somehow the trees are very high. We speculated that the parrots are too intelligent to be eaten by the cats or too high up in the trees. But this was incredible.
And we figured they must have been pets at one time that the owners let go or they escaped, and they just started creating these colonies.
No, they colonized them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You just can say visiting Roma Maker Faire is very well worth a trip.
Oh yeah.
Cool.
But if you go on the sleeper car between Vienna and Rome. You want to make sure to have a nice padded bag as a headboard, because it's very difficult to sleep against all the uneven, hard surfaces of the train. But we were very fortunate with our sleeper cars, so I'm grateful that we did the sleeper car thing.
We also learned while traveling from Vienna, you can get a Sparschiene, so a discounted ticket if you book in advance. That's very good. And the best thing was inside the sleeping car, you get the crew offer you hot food and meal and drinks, and some wagon offered drinks and food all the night.
Yeah.
And we get very cheap wine and beer.